Quicken. He's outpolling the Kennedy woman from Massachusetts. As the evening wore on and the results from across the state came in, the hotel suite became louder and merrier. A couple of news reporters arrived and pushed through the crowd to ask for an interview. Scanwell grinned at them and looked at Jane. "Let's wait for the final results, shall we?" Jane said. Nodding, Scanwell said, "Good idea. Shouldn't be long now." A news camera crew barged in and commandeered one of the big upholstered wing chairs, one guy manhandling it into a corner of the room while his partners set up their minicam and lights. "All right," said the analyst on the TV screen. "Here are the final results." The room fell silent. "As expected and predicted, the winner of the New Hampshire primary is Senator Charles Waldron of New York, with 47% of the vote. Texas Governor Morgan Scanwell," said his smiling colleague, "is the big surprise of the night, coming in second with 22%, slightly ahead of Michael Underwood." The rest was drowned out by cheering. Jane gave Scanwell a celebratory kiss on the cheek. Then the governor jumped to his feet and started shaking hands with everybody. Suddenly everyone in the room wanted to grasp his hand. The TV reporter waded through the pack and led him to the wing chair for a congratulatory interview, while the volunteers started for the door, heading downstairs to the ballroom for a well-earned celebration. And Jane found herself wondering what Dan was doing. She knew she had been foolish. Stupid, even, to go see him in Texas, to be alone with him, to love him. That was a mistake, she told herself sternly. It won't happen again. It can't happen again. Not now. Not ever. Still, she wondered what Dan was doing at this very moment. "I never realized it could be so cold in Texas," said Asim al-Bashir as he and Dan hustled from his Jaguar to the bar of the Astro Motel. Dan grinned at him. "The locals say there's nothing between Texas and the North Pole except a barbed wire fence." It was warm inside the bar, although this close to midnight the place was nearly empty. The TV set at the far end of the bar was showing a hockey game. A couple of rednecks were at the other end of the bar, hunched over long-necked beers. Dan saw that the hockey game was in its final minute. The Dallas Stars were ahead of the Red Wings 3-2. As he led al-Bashir to a booth, the Red Wings goalie came out to help in a desperate attempt to tie the score. "Don't go into overtime," Dan prayed silently. The barmaid sauntered over to the booth and Dan ordered a Glenlivet on the rocks. To his surprise, al-Bashir asked for the same.
"We're out of Glenlivet," said the barmaid. "How about Johnny Black?"
"That will be fine," al-Bashir answered. Dan agreed with a resigned nod. The Stars stole the puck from the attacking Red Wings and skated to an easy score at the undefended goal. The Detroit crowd groaned and booed. The final buzzer sounded as the barmaid banged the two scotches onto their table.
6:50, she announced.
"Run a tab for me, okay?" Dan said.
"We're closing in half an hour. Y'all want me to bring you another round now? Then I can run your card and get out of here on time."
Dan grinned at her. "Sure, why not? And turn on Fox News or CNN, will you?" As the barmaid left their booth, al-Bashir lifted his glass. "To continued success," he toasted. "I'll drink to that," said Dan, touching his glass to the Arab's. As he sipped the whiskey, Dan thought that al-Bashir wasn't one of those fanatical Muslims who wouldn't touch liquor. All to the good, he told himself. That means he isn't a terrorist. Dan smiled inwardly. He doesn't dress like a terrorist. That suit must have cost a small fortune. Silk, it looks like. Probably Savile Row. "Things are going well," al-Bashir said as the barmaid brought their second round. Dan fished out his credit card and handed it to the barmaid. Al-Bashir didn't move a muscle. "Yep, we're perking right along," Dan said. "Thanks to you." Al-Bashir shrugged modestly. "I'm glad that I was able to convince Garrison to loan you the money you need." "It's put us over the hump. With a steady inflow of cash, we've been able to move right ahead," Dan smiled happily. "I believe Senator Thornton has been of some help to you as well." Dan's smile evaporated. But he admitted, "She's gotten the FAA to back off. That's the most important thing. We'll be flying the space plane with Jerry Adair at the controls in another week." "Despite the cold?" al-Bashir asked. His round, neatly bearded face looked relaxed, at ease. Yet his dark eyes were piercing.
No problem. The satellite is finished?
Dan sipped his scotch. Then, we're just about ready to turn her on. One more flight to send a crew to check out all her systems, and we'll be set to start generating power.
Smiling, Al-Bashir said, The receiving facility at White Sands is ready. I went down there last week.
Did you? Dan looked into those steady brown eyes. Al-Bashir's been all over the place, he knew. The man had made himself a familiar figure everywhere in the Astro headquarters. And he went to the Rectenna farm, too. Dan felt impressed. He's really made himself a part of the team. Next thing you know, he'll want to ride in the space plane.
Should I worry about him? Dan asked himself. How much should I let him see?
The sardonic voice in his head answered, He's your pipeline to the money, pal. Close him down and you close your whole operation.
Yeah, Dan answered. But still...
Al-Bashir broke into his silent debate. I would like to hire your secretary.
April?
Dan felt a sudden jolt of alarm.
April Simmons, yes.
I could offer her twice the salary you're paying.
To work for you?
As my personal assistant, yes.
Stalling for time to think this through, Dan asked, In Houston?
Or Tunis, or wherever I need her. I travel a great deal, and she would be of invaluable assistance to me.
Assistance, Dan heard himself growl. And what else?
Al-Bashir smiled smoothly. Whatever else happens to arise.
Fighting a sudden impulse to punch Al-Bashir in a smirking face, Dan said, I can't let her go. She runs my office for me. She's even doing my public relations work now.
Is she under contract to Astro?
Dan shook his head warily.
Perhaps she would like to work for me. Would you mind if I asked her about it?
I'd mind a hell of a lot, Dan snapped.
Then he recovered his self-control and added, Go ahead and ask her if you want to.
I want to. Very much.
Steaming, Dan saw out of the corner of his eye that the TV screen above the bar was flashing the words New Hampshire Primary against a background of red, white, and blue. Dan turned to look squarely at the screen, glad of the excuse to cut his conversation with Al-Bashir. The sound was muted, but the numbers were clear. Scanwell had come in a strong second, surprising most of the forecasters. The image changed abruptly to a picture of New York Senator Waldron standing at a hotel ballroom podium, waving, mouthing a victory speech to a crowd of cheering, waving, straw-hatted supporters. Then it cut to Scanwell, standing at a podium in a different hotel, a wide smile splitting his craggy face, speaking words that Dan could not hear. And Jane was standing at his side, also smiling, looking radiant and completely happy. Dan forgot about Al-Bashir sitting in the booth with him. He simply stared at Jane. She waltzes down here and pops into my bed and says she still loves me. And then she tells me she's married to Scanwell, married to him, her husband. She'll be at his side all the way to the White House. She loves me and she's married to him. Einstein was right. Nuclear physics is a lot simpler than politics. And love.
Matagorda Island, Texas. Hangar B was crackling with activity, Al-Bashir saw. The sandy-haired pilot, Adair, was clambering through the open hatch of the space plane's cockpit, while a team of technicians manned consoles lined along the hangar's far wall. Other technicians were fussing around the plane's landing gear, checking the tires and pneumatic struts that held the wheels, all under the watchful, baleful eyes of the black man, Niles Muhammad, who stood watching the plane and the people around it, arms folded across his chest. Muhammad wore olive-green coveralls, so spotless and unwrinkled they looked almost like a military uniform. Al-Bashir walked up to him.
The test goes well? He asked.
Muhammad barely nodded.
So far.
I've been meaning to ask you, Al-Bashir said. Your name indicates that you might be a Muslim, is that so?
Me? A Muslim?
Forgive my curiosity.
My father was a Muslim, Muhammad said without taking his eyes from the plane. Took a Muslim name and all.
And you?
Baptist, like my mama.
Ah, I see.
Al-Bashir started to turn away. I got a question for you, Muhammad